Healthy Alternatives. Both research and real-life experiences are making it clear every day that our traditional medical system and practices need to be rethought, revised, and recharged in light of a more holistic approach to health. Dr. Jerry V. Teplitz, host of Healthy Alternatives, has been a pioneer for 36 years in stress management and optimum health. With a Ph.D. in holistic health sciences, a law degree, and as the author of 8 books, all focused on health, stress management, and performance, Dr. Teplitz is uniquely qualified to help us explore and incorporate healthy alternatives into our daily lives. He is a professional speaker and has shared his wisdom with over 1 million people. Join him to reach your highest level of health and wellness. Now, here's Dr. Teplitz.
Welcome to Healthy Alternatives. I'm Dr. Jerry Teplitz. What Healthy Alternatives is about, we all want to live longer, enjoy health more. We want to reach optimum levels of health and well-being. And that's what I attempt to bring on each of the Healthy Alternative shows. My guest I'm going to be talking a little bit later is Sharon Promislow. Sharon has been a practitioner instructor of Brain Gym, Touch for Health, 3-in-1 Concepts, many, many other disciplines, and she presents internationally to school districts, teacher and services, education conferences, and corporations. She's the author of the book Making the Brain-Body Connection, Putting Out the Fire of Fear, and she's also the author of the Top 10 Stress Releasers. We're going to be talking to Sharon since school's starting about what students can do to perform even better. We'll be talking to Sharon in just a few minutes. Every week, I like to begin the show by talking about an issue or concern you should know about because it can have a real impact on you, your family, and loved ones. What I want to talk about is Splenda, which is sucralose. What it is, it's a artificial ingredient that was created as a sugar substitute. What most people don't realize that, it has FDA approval, but there are only 2 human trials that were done prior to the FDA approval. Get this, one of the trials included a total of 36 human subjects. And the longest-running trial lasted only 4 days, and it looked at Splenda in relation to tooth decay, not human tolerance. And for determining the absorption of Splenda in the body, a total of 8 men were studied. Now, the FDA says there have been over 100 studies done on Splenda, but most of those were on animals, and contrary to what the FDA is saying, it's a safe product, there are actually plenty of problems revealed in these studies. And again, most of them are animal studies, decrease in red blood cells, signs of anemia, increased male infertility, enlarged and calcified kidneys, spontaneous abortions in nearly half the rabbit population given Splenda, and 23% deaths in rabbits compared to 6% death rate in the controls. Now, the latest piece on Splenda is they're finding it in our wastewater, surface water, and groundwater. So water samples were taken from 19 U.S. drinking water treatment plants that serve more than 28 million people. They analyzed it for Splenda, and they found the sweetener in 15 out of 19 drinking water treatment plants tested. In the finished water, they found it in 13 out of 17 plants, and they found it in 8 out of 10 distribution systems. And the Splenda persists regardless of if there's chlorine or chloramines in the water. Now, 3 years ago, an animal study published in the Journal of Toxicology and Environmental Health found that Splenda reduced the amount of good bacteria in an animal's intestines by 50%. It increased the pH level of intestines and contributed to increases in body weight, and it's absorbed by fat cells. So what we're looking at is a substance that you may not be taking it in your beverages, in your food, but by drinking the public drinking water, you're getting it in your body. we need to really look more closely at the whole notion of artificial sweeteners. And I think the key word is artificial, that we really need to look more closely at this, and the FDA really needs to look again at whether or not this should be allowed to be out there. If you want to know more about me, Dr. Jerry Teplitz, you go to teplitz.com, and you can follow me on Twitter and Facebook. I put out a free monthly e-newsletter that you can sign up for. It's health, nutrition, wellness oriented. It has things different from healthy alternatives by going to teplitz.com and click on the About Home button, and you can sign up there. Every week, I also like to talk to you about a healthy breakthrough. The newest discoveries, latest information about healthy alternatives you can use for yourself, your family, and loved ones. What I want to talk about is Alzheimer's disease. Now, the negative side of this is someone develops Alzheimer's disease every 69 seconds, and by 2050, that's expected to drop to every 33 seconds. So we're really at epidemic proportions even now, with 5.4 million Americans, which is basically one out of eight people age 65 and over, living with Alzheimer's disease. And this is expected to jump by 2050 to 16 million. So we're looking at a epidemic. And at the moment, from regular medical science, there are no really treatments that really do much of anything. Now, there is a substance that can really help people with Alzheimer's. It's called alpha-lipoic acid. What alpha-lipoic acid is, it's called ALA for short. It's something that reduces oxidative stress and your neuron energy depletions, which are characteristics of Alzheimer's disease. And so the researchers that has been done on this found that if they took ALA and combined it with vitamin E and acetylcarotin, that it showed actually improvements and showed promise for slowing the progression of Alzheimer's disease. One of the things is ALA is a powerful antioxidant, and it's one of the most effective free radical scavengers in the body. It's also the only one known to be easily transported across the blood-brain barrier, so it's able to get into your brain. So one study of patients with Alzheimer's disease were given 600 milligrams of ALA daily for 12 months, and it stabilized their cognitive function. A follow-up study increased the number of patients in the study, extended the observation period to 48 months, and they found the progression of the disease was dramatically lower among those taking alpha-lipoic acid. So this is a way to look at something you can do now, because what ALA is doing, it's scavenging free radicals, it's chelating minerals out of our system, reducing oxidative stress and inflammation. So you need to look at this if you are somebody in your family or somebody you know is suffering from Alzheimer's disease. You need to look at starting them on ALA. Before I introduce my guest, Sharon Promislow, I'd like to talk to you about getting your help. Healthy Alternatives is downloaded by between 70 and 100,000 people a month, and I'd like to really increase this number because I think the information I give to you is very valuable information. And so if you would email friends and family and relatives, coworkers, Skype about this, put it on to Twitter, on Facebook pages. I would really, really appreciate that you're doing that. My guest today is Sharon Promislow. Sharon is the author of three books, Making the Brain-Body Connection, Putting Out the Fire of Fear, and The Top 10 Stress Releasers. She has toured North America with Making the Brain-Body Connection, and it's become one of the 100 best-selling books in cognitive psychology. She's appeared on all the major American networks, Voice of America,
And her background is she's been a practitioner instructor of Brain Gym, Touch for Health, 3-in-1 Concepts, Wellness Kinesiology, and she also specialized in presenting internationally to school districts, teacher and service education conferences, and corporations. So Sharon, welcome to Healthy Alternatives.
Thank you for having me.
So let me start with, how did you decide to focus in on working with schools and starting to learn the things that you're now teaching?
Well, first of all, I did have a child in my own family that had learning disabilities, and I was looking for answers for him, and I discovered the wonderful, wonderful world of specialized kinesiology. Made a huge impact on him and changed my life. I changed professions at that time back in the mid-1980s. So that was the first of all. And then I realized that there, when you understand how the brain works and how it can work better, there's such simple ways that you can share information with people that can make huge impact on their productivity and their learning. And I wanted to make sure it got out there in the world.
Great. And by the way, just for transparency, I've known Sharon for many, many years. I've met her family and seen how highly functional her son is now, and so, you know, he had lots of difficulties, but he's doing quite well now. And now this is the start of the school year, so let's focus in on learning in schools. So what can students do to help them have a good school year?
The number one thing they can do is to make sure they take that water bottle to school. This is all common information, but honestly, how many of us forget it? We must hydrate ourselves with water. I have my cup of coffee a day, what have you, and I'm sure the kids sneak an occasional pop, but really, water is number one because it's essential for our brain-body communication and good messaging throughout our brain and body for better learning.
So what is water actually doing in the system that it becomes so important?
Well, it's actually heightening our energy and improving concentration and also our physical and mental coordination. Basically, we know that information comes in and it has to jump from neuron to neuron if you're up on your brain knowledge. And that messaging has to go through a medium that has to be hydrated with water. So you're definitely going to be slower in getting the message if you're not hydrated.
Now, let's look at the notion of eating. Is that also, what the kids are eating, from your standpoint, is that affecting their school performance as well?
Oh, you know, this now is common knowledge. You know, Jerry, when we started our practices some 30 years ago, we were just crying out in the wilderness. Now you pick up every newspaper and there's articles about how you should be drinking water, how you must watch what goes into your body because you're definitely affecting the chemical balances in your body by the nature of the food that you're eating. And we all know that there's just too much junk food going on in America. You know, they are quoting like literally over 30% learning disabilities in the school systems now, incredible jumps, you know, just within the most recent years. And you know what? I don't think there's 30% gross disability. I think there's probably 100% bad eating going on.
Now, with eating, just for our listeners to be aware in terms of food served to kids, there have been some school districts that have gone much healthier in their diet and actually seen kids' school performance go up, their concentration, their attention, all those factors really change just from changing diet, which goes right along with what you're saying about its importance.
Right, and indeed, the major players in the manufacturing are getting the picture that they have to change or die, and you'll find your pop manufacturers are in the water business and in the juice business, and unfortunately, the juices still are very highly concentrated with sugar. So we are going back to please send your child to school with a water bottle with good quality water.
But then you also need the school to be saying it's okay for kids to go to the bathroom more often.
And that
because
true.
They're drinking more then.
What actually happens, think about when you water a plant, Jerry. At first, if it's a very, very dry plant, the water will go right through. the pot. But as the soil becomes hydrated, the water stays. So honestly, once you establish good patterns of drinking water, you will not have that much of an issue as you would think.
Great. Now, in your book, Making the Brain-Body Connection, you talk about movement and it being the key to learning. Can you explain what you mean by that and how that impacts better brain function?
Well, movement actually creates the feel-good chemical messengers of our system. Anybody who's been a runner or even if you go for a good walk, you know that endorphins are the natural opiate that are manufactured by the body, and it's stimulated by the movement. That's that famous runner's high that gets so many people really quite addicted to their running. So one side of the body is – I'm sorry, Jerry, go ahead.
No, go ahead. Continue.
No, it's just that one side of the body is controlled by an opposite brain hemisphere. I have a feeling that your listeners who've been following you know this already. So when we just walk and one arm is touching the other leg, or the right leg is going forward at the same time as the left arm and vice versa, we are really creating incredible stimulation over a part of the brain called the corpus callosum. This is really important for learning, because that's how you get your whole picture and your detailed brains working together, and that's where the best learning occurs.
Most people aren't even aware that the corpus callosum can either be a bridge for communication between the two hemispheres of the brain, because it has somewhere between 200 million and 800 million nerve fibers that run across it. For many of us, it actually becomes a barrier where we become just strictly left hemispheric focused or right focused and don't have access to both. So is the movement there opening that aspect up?
Absolutely. Here's a big word for you that's easily explained. It's called myelination. The more you do these activities, the more you're laying down the swiftness of the wiring up to 10 times faster. So in the past, and this goes for all of us, have you ever had a day when you feel like your left hand doesn't know what your right hand is doing?
That's assuming they can't even find a left or right hand to begin with.
That is right. That's right. So really, the more interconnections you have, the smarter you are, and that's why it's so good for kids to have a chance to play and romp in the schoolyard before school begins. That's why recess is important. Things are moving back again. They were doing a lot of cutting out of physical activities in the schools, which really troubled me. And now, here again, go back to your daily newspapers. They're finally getting the picture that exercise is extremely important for kids, and because there's lots of very important vestibular, which means your balance and brain development going on during this play.
Yeah, some of the recent research that I've seen was talking about how kids on the standardized testing here in the States, how their scores of kids are going up when they put them back in phys ed, time to the class and give them actual activity breaks.
Right. And I'll tell you, Jerry, what's really fascinating is that actually these movements which are stimulating both brain hemispheres are also manufacturing the neurotransmitter dopamine in both the front part of the brain, which is all your best thinking, your ability to see patterns and learn, and in your emotional centers, which lets you control your emotions, and even all your movement activities. So, and this is one of the neurotransmitters which millions of children are diagnosed as ADD or ADHD and are taking Ritalin to balance a deficit.
So since you brought up ADHD, ADD, all the alphabets there, how would this notion of movement affect attention and learning for kids who have
the implications are just staggering. When you think that you can use targeted body movement and natural process to help enhance the manufacture and balance of these particular substances, also obviously nutrition and junk food and sugar are undermining biochemistry, but these processes are very effective, we found, in many, many cases of attention deficit disorder. And here again, movement is very important to learning, and we should be a particular notice parents of children who have been having attention problems.
Are there particular types of movements that you're finding to be most effective?
Just what we were saying before. For starters, making sure that there is some cross-lateral, which means cross-crawl movement, that your child is able to easily walk left arm forward when the right leg goes forward. Don't laugh. You'll see many kids with these attention and focus problems that when they run, they're running with the left arm and left leg forward at the same time, not that cross-crawl motion, which is something that should have come in very early in motor development. And sometimes there's a glitch. Sometimes there's very simple primitive reflexes that haven't quite gone into what we call inhibition. You know, they should have gone away earlier on, and or motor developments like the cross-crawl movement that haven't come in, which could really be cascading into problems for a child. And guess what? Particularly in our field of educational kinesiology, we can really help bring up to snuff those little missing pieces, and then you'll just have a cascade of improvement across the child's whole life.
So before we continue, I'd like to remind you, listening to Healthy Alternatives with Dr. Jerry Teplitz on webtalkradio.net, and we'll be back with my guest Sharon Promislow in just a moment.
If you're involved with sales, you need to know about my DVD album, workbook, and book called Switched on Selling, Balance Your Brain for Sales Success. Four of the six DVDs in that series are me actually teaching the Switched on Selling seminar, so you can take it as if you're live right there. Tony Alessandro, my co-author of the book, who's a sales guru, he does two DVDs on selling techniques. You've got a workbook that works you through it. And what kind of results can you expect from taking the time going through Switched on Selling? I've actually had people who have doubled, tripled, quadrupled sales in a month after taking the class. We've done research studies. You can find that at teplitz.com. And there's a special offer on the series. It's usually $299. It's yours for $197. It has a 60-day money-back guarantee, but you have to call my office to order it. It's 800-777-3529. That's 800-77-RELAX, telling me you heard about the special offer on Healthy Alternatives.
So my guest today is Sharon Promislow. Sharon's the author of three books, Making the Brain-Body Connection, Putting Out the Fire of Fear, and the Top 10 Stress Releasers. Making the Brain-Body Connection is one of the 100 best-selling books in cognitive psychology. Her background is very diverse. She's a practitioner instructor of Brain Gym, Touch for Health, 3-in-1 Concept, Wellness Kinesiology. And she primarily focuses on school systems and education conferences and corporations in terms of speaking as well. Her website is enhancedlearning.com, enhancedlearning.com. And we're talking about, with kids going back to school, what can they do to be better at school. So, Sharon, can you give us an example of one or two kids that you've worked with and the changes you've seen by adding movement into what they do and how it's impacted them?
Well, I'd actually like to take that question even a little bit broader. Let's take it actually right into the classroom, because number one, to have good learning occur, and this doesn't matter whether a child has a diagnosis hanging over their head or not, the first thing that has to happen is they have to be handling stress appropriately. So one of the most incredible things you see is when teachers take a few of our simple activities that we teach, something as simple as, have you ever introduced your audience to positive points? Simply the fact of holding above your eyebrows, holding your forehead with just the lightest touch and a little bit of an upward tug. that it starts to bring calmness and balance to the front parts of the brain. And literally, when teachers do a few of activities like this, when kids come in off the playground, and maybe another couple of activities to get their eyes working properly together and their ears all set up for listening, the whole classroom is receptive and in a place where learning can occur. So if you want to bring it down to individuals, you'll have a child who comes in just literally bouncing off the wall. And with a few simple activities, they can become centered, calm, and ready to learn. So, you know, key phrases here are focus, ability to attend, and that has a lot to do with just simply getting them settled in, well, for those of us who know the brain, we'll say their brain stem, the bottom part of the brain, which has to make sure that they feel safe and comfortable before they could learn. So there you go, you know, 25 kids at a time. In terms of individuals who've come, we've had kids come who have had these really scary labels put on them, and really with just a little bit of work, we've seen huge improvements in their ability to read, to have the letters stay firm on the page, to be able to attend, and to be calm.
Now, how can you help kids who have memory problems be better?
Oh, I'll tell you, there's some really simple things. Number one, we have such a false expectation of what people should be able to remember. This blew me away when I first learned of it at neurological conferences. We should not be expecting people to go sit still and focus and concentrate for more minutes than they are years old to a maximum of 20. And I'll say that again. A five-year-old in kindergarten should not be expected to sit there and focus even at story hour without moving even shortly or having a little sip of water for longer than 5 minutes. And obviously we always have more expectation than that. And even you and I, 20 minutes and then just take a little break, because memory is shown scientifically to be strongest at the beginning and at the end of segments of time. So it makes sense that the more beginnings and endings you create, the better you and easier it'll be to inlay memory.
So you're saying, in terms of the moving, based on your age, not more than 20 minutes. So you're not talking about a very long break. You're talking about just doing a little stretching for seconds, and that's enough.
That really just very, think about it. We've all had this. Have you ever had this happen? You're in the flow. You're at your computer. You're writing an article. You go on for hours, and God forbid your computer crashes and you haven't saved. You will not know what you wrote. You'll have to totally recreate it. So it doesn't mean that you can't be in the flow and do something longer period of time, but that's only your short-term memory. In order to give you, this is a whole other program. Let's do this, Jerry. We'll just talk about memory for a whole program. But at that point, you have not had a chance for a part of the brain called the hippocampus to get hold of this information in usable chunks to get it into long-term memory. So basically, we're saying take shorter breaks, create more beginnings and ends, and then in terms of the kids who are studying, at that age when they're actually studying, the science shows that you should be reviewing information 10 minutes after you learn it, which could be like just that a 10-minute break or that 20-minute break. Just take a look at what you've been doing. Then 48 hours later, and then 7 days later, then at the end of the term, the student will have no trouble bringing that right back from their long-term memory.
Now, in your book, you talk about a dominant brain organization pattern. What does that mean? Can you explain it to our listeners?
Well, a lot of people might not realize this, but they have two sides of their cerebral cortex, their highest learning brain. One side is more detail-oriented. One side is more whole-picture-oriented. And each one of our sensory organs kind of likes to live in one side or the other. So if you haven't spent time doing that cross-crawl and making sure that both sides of the brain can talk to each other, you might end up having a dominant eye off, say, your detail brain, so you're seeing all the little pictures, and your dominant ear is really wanting to play in your whole picture, la-di-da, rhythm and blues brain. And if you're not integrated, you don't have much chance to have good learning, because it'll be like watching a Japanese picture with no subtitles. So this is fascinating. This is a fascinating part of our work when we introduce people to the notion that they actually do have a dominant eye. One eye wants to see and lead the pack, and a dominant ear. We know what our dominant hand is. It's the hand you write with. And as soon as you have dominant seeing or hearing on the opposite side of the brain from your dominant hand that wants to write the information, you're opening up the door to the possibility of what I call all the disses, the dyslexias, the dysgraphias, you know, hard to write. It all lives in that competition between the two-sided brain leads for your different sensory and hands.
Now, Sharon, what about kids who were forced to write right-handed, but they were naturally left? What does that do for them, and how does this play out for them?
It actually is fairly crucial. It's not a good thing. It's not a good thing. Fortunately, today they don't do this on the whole anymore. Mm-hmm. Occasionally, it happens. They want a child to have a dominant hand because it indicates that one of the brain hemispheres is going to take the lead in language acquisition. So they get awfully nervous if by the time a child is 5 or 6 years old, because of the way our school system is now front-loading reading and writing, they're inclined to really want to push a hand dominance. A parent shouldn't panic. Just make sure that your child remains integrated. Teach them the simple activities in my book, the simple activities that handle stress in your work, and like it's all out there of how you can help your child be more attentive and focused and using their full brain. But indeed, it was a problem in past years. And the thing that is a problem, let the parents know that certain things like vision, really the binocular vision, meaning the ability for eyes to come together to read properly, does not necessarily come together until age 8 in a normal child, just a bit slower in development. And what really concerns me is a lot of kids are being labeled as having a vision problem in kindergarten and grade 1, because they now front load a lot of the reading and writing into these early grades, where before they never used to come until age 7 or 8. So everybody, just take heart and know that your child is probably totally normal. Don't let the schools label them. Don't panic. Normal development will probably just flip all the right switches in the appropriate time for your child. Just keep their esteem up and let them know that ultimately can be easy. And indeed, if they go to a brain gym practitioner or somebody else involved in specialized kinesiology, which can help integrate the focus issues, the eyes, help the ears, that'll be helpful too.
Just for our listeners to be aware, in Denmark, I believe they don't actually teach reading until 8, because they know that the eyes and the brain are not integrated to be able to do it. And Denmark's one of the more wealthy countries in the world, so it's not
Absolutely.
Having a brain drain from learning problems by waiting until 8 years old to
Well, this is why almost all the kids, I believe it's in China, are wearing glasses, and many kids in America are wearing glasses coming into kindergarten, because there is such a push for these visual focus issues that really the body is not really developed for necessarily. And that being said, there are some kids who are reading on their own when they're 2 years old. Everybody's different. Everybody's perfect. And we just have to stop having the expectation that everybody's the same and will meet the same marks at the same ages. There's particularly the difference, obviously, between male and female brains. Fortunately, they've finally gotten off this horse that all brains are the same. They're acknowledging that there are differences between the male and female brain. There's no doubt that women are more fine-tuned to fine motor skills earlier on than boys who, like in Denmark, should be hanging upside down from trees in the park rather than concentrating on forming their ABCs.
And if they fall off, they'll just land in the snowbank, so they'll be okay.
That's right. They won't get concussions.
So,
by the way, that's a whole other issue, the whole other program, the whole problem of possible concussion with some of the sports playing that is going on. Our brains are such fragile things, particularly in the developmental years, and I really invite parents to be careful in protecting their kids from things that can impact a brain injury.
So for my listeners, if you'd like to learn more about what Sharon Promislo has available, you can go to her website at enhancedlearning.com, enhancedlearning.com, and you can also purchase her books on Amazon or at any bookstore. Sharon, thanks for being a guest on Healthy Alternatives today.
It's been a pleasure.
My guest next week is going to be the media director for the Yes on 37 California Rights No campaign. What this is about California putting on their ballot a referendum item, which is to require genetically engineered foods that are put into products and sold in California to be labeled GMO. This is going to be the first potential change to give people a real choice to know if GMO is in the food. And Stacy's their media director. We're going to be talking about what this means, how it got on the ballot, and the importance of this referendum. You're not going to want to miss this one. This is Dr. Jerry Teplitz. You can find out more about me at teplitz.com, or you can follow me on Facebook and Twitter. Thanks for listening.
Thank you for being with us today for Healthy Alternatives. For more information about Dr. Teplitz and his availability for speaking engagements, please click on the globe on the webtalkradio.net page in front of you, or go to teplitz.com. You may also follow him on Facebook and Twitter by using the icons on the page. To find out more about his books, please click on any of the book covers you see. Eat well, rest well, take a breath, get some exercise, and we'll see you again right here next week for another edition of Healthy Alternatives.